You shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free. Tonight, we're going to be joined by the great Susan Lindauer on Global Great Awakenings on globalfreedomtv.com. We're so honored that you're joining us. Go to our website, globalfreedomtv.com, for a backlog in any of the programs that you've missed, and you'll be caught up. Susan, it is wonderful to see you again and have you on. We are in the midst of the hurricane. I feel like that scene from Twister when they're tied to the middle of the pipes, and they're in the middle getting sucked up, and they're seeing the internal mechanisms of the hurricane and the lightning and the cows flying around. There's so much happening in this Gaza-Israeli, and it's expanding to Europe and to all sorts of things. Let me play this quick video before we jump into the discussion to kind of set the tone. And it has relevance because today Biden outed Special Forces Delta operators that the U.S. secretly inserted into the Israel-Hamas area. This is an RT interview that I did that contextualized that and raised this issue. Here we go.
U.S. National Security Council spokesperson John Kirby, during an interview with Fox News, has stated that if comes to retrieving American captives in Gaza, Washington won't rule out the prospect of sending in troops.
There's no plans or intentions to put U.S. troops on the ground. We're going to be careful about what we say publicly about our efforts to get those hostages home.
Would you absolutely rule out the possibility of any kind of U.S. forces being on the ground there?
What I won't do is rule anything in or out when it comes to getting our hostages home.
And such a move is not unprecedented. Washington launched the ill-fated Operation Eagle Claw nearly four decades ago. The goal was to rescue 52 staff members held captive by Americans and Iranian students at the U.S. Embassy in Tehran. On November the 4th, 1979, up to 3,000 radical youth attacked the American mission, aided by the newly formed Iranian government. After nearly six months of fruitless negotiations between Washington and Tehran, the U.S. launched Operation Eagle Claw. As the force prepared to take off from the deck of an aircraft carrying the Arabian Sea, a Navy helicopter collided with a plane, killing the five airmen and three Marines on board and effectively terminating the mission before it began. Now, this was live to former U.S. officer Scott Bennett. Scott, good to have you on board. These are sad times indeed. Nevertheless, we do need to talk about it. Now, we've heard reports suggesting that Washington is mulling over if it would send troops into Gaza to rescue the Americans being held hostage. Do you think that's likely, or would it be legally justified?
Well, I think it's more than likely it's going to happen, but I think they're going to initiate a hostage rescue false flag operation like they did when they claimed to have rescued Private Jessica Lynch in the Iraq War in 2003, if you remember, and that was later exposed as false. But it is designed, and I did this in the Army, psychological warfare, it is designed to ramp up American patriotism and military support. So I don't have any doubt, and I've said this before, they are going to send in troops, probably SEALs or special forces, working with their Israelis, claiming to rescue all sorts of starving and bloodied and dirty hostages from Gaza. And it will not be real. It will be a dramatic episode meant to ramp up support for the approaching U.S. interventionalism. And I don't doubt that that also is going to happen with the second aircraft carrier that the U.S. is sending. I predict a Gulf of Tonkin moment where they sink some ship that's been declassified already to be a junkyard. They're going to sink a ship probably and claim this is their Gulf of Tonkin moment and try and initiate an American World War II scenario. And this has all been designed as a diversionary tactic from the Ukrainian failure. But you see Ukraine, the United States, and Israel on one side. And then you see the entire Muslim world, the African world, Russia, China, Iran, Syria, Lebanon, Pakistan, all siding with the Palestinian people. And let's never forget, the Palestinian people have been ethnically cleansed and genocided like the American Indians were in the 1800s by the American military. The Palestinians have been similarly mistreated and tortured and starved, and this is part of an Israeli operation to bulldoze and destroy every inch of Gaza so that they can have Maui beachfront property, but they have to destroy everything first. So I have no doubt they're going to initiate a full destruction. They've already said they're going to disregard all the laws of war. The question is the rest of the Muslim world going to rise up and, you know, defend these poor people from genocide? And I think they will, and America will find itself completely isolated because no American wants to participate in this either. Every American with a brain and a heart understands the Israelis have initiated this from 20 years of slow torture and destruction and dehumanization. And that's not what Americans, and especially American military like myself, swore an oath to uphold. We swore an uphold to liberate the oppressed. And the Palestinian people have been oppressed by the Israelis, without a doubt.
Yeah, Scott, you know, here at RT, we've tried to sort of show both sides of the story. We try to show, of course, we can go back all the way back to history, to the 70s, but we try to sort of show that we're pro-life, not pro-Palestinian or pro-Israeli or either way. The West or Western media doesn't really show it that way. We know there's a lot of Israeli or Jewish lobbyists in America, but how far would America, would Joe Biden take this? And given the fact that it could quite rightly start a catastrophic reaction from neighboring countries, do you say it's possible, but it's worrying, sir. Can we not expect some sort of, you know, taking this a little bit easier?
Well, RT is the only network that tells the truth. And that's why so many the best and brightest people enjoy speaking on RT, because RT doesn't edit or limit anything. So RT is one of the few networks that is telling the truth about this matter in a balanced way, in an honest way. And I think what you're talking about is very accurate. The West is delusional and frantic and recognizes it's slowly coming apart. And as a result, it's becoming extraordinarily emotional and responsive. And there's no reason. And its propaganda has toxified and hypnotized the American State Department, the American intelligence agencies, Capitol Hill. I've never seen such a hypocritical flip from all of the conservatives that were objecting to the funding of Ukraine, instantly saying to fund Israel without any hesitation. And it's very disturbing, because not only do the American people not want that, they object to that, but it could very, very likely get us into a war situation, because Hamas is never going to surrender. The Palestinian people are never going to surrender. Syria is never going to surrender. The Hezbollah Lebanese fighters are never going to surrender. Pakistan, Iraq, Iran, Yemen, all of these African nations, too, they are all rising up with aggression, because the images of women and children being starved and bloodied and dying of thirst. The world is not going to tolerate it, but the Muslim world especially is not going to tolerate it. These are real human behavioral decisions and emotional triggers that either have been totally miscalculated by the Israelis and the U.S., or they really don't care. They hope a war perhaps is going to release them and divert attention from their own domestic failure. Netanyahu is about to collapse. Isn't it ironic and interesting that this happened just as he was about to collapse? Same with Joe Biden. The Ukraine war collapsing and is basically ended. So this is a very suspicious and convenient distraction operation, but I think it will end up annihilating Bibi Netanyahu and his entire cabinet. I think the Israeli people are going to rise up and say, look, we don't want death. We don't want to exterminate the Palestinian people. And we certainly don't want the whole Muslim world waging war against Israel. Where are we going to go? Ukraine? That might be a thought they may have been tactically planning as well. It's also going to destroy Joe Biden's political career. But I've said for a long time, they're probably going to assassinate Joe Biden and replace him with Gavin Newsom as they move Kamala Harris into Dianne Feinstein's position. So the whole world in the West is going through a meltdown. The only nation that seems to be calm, cool, and collected is Russia. And I think Vladimir Putin is rising up, not just because of his ability, but because of the disability of Western leaders. I've never witnessed such an implosion of mental clarity, of soft power, of diplomacy, of reasoning. I've never witnessed this in the West. It's very sad to me to witness my country and Canada, Australia, Britain, America, they're all falling apart. The sexual schizophrenia, transgenderism, the homosexual rainbow flag, those are the values you're trying to export to the world. That's why the world is turning against America and turning to BRICS. So that's the other thing that's going
to happen. We're going to have to...
The BRICS nation is going to step in.
Forgive me, Scott. I'm going to have to thank you there, stop you there, and thank you. Sadly, we have run out of time. Really appreciate you joining me. Always.
So, Susan, that's kind of the opening statement. And I'll just say, since that interview, you've got U.S. ships being attacked by drones from Yemen, from different areas of Syria. You've got Biden exposing Special Forces Delta Force that are in country. He's exposed their face. He took pictures with them. Everyone's up in arms because you're not supposed to. So these guys that were there in secret that I predicted would go there have now been exposed. But, you know, you know this material, I think, better than anyone. So I'm going to hand it to you to build off of what you see is evolving in this whole situation.
Well, I want to interject something right here, because there's something a lot of people do not know. And that is the role of dual citizenship Jews, dual citizenship U.S.-Israeli citizens. The head of the CIA is a dual Israeli citizen. The head of the National Intelligence Service in the United States is a dual Israeli citizen. Blinken is a dual Israeli citizen. Okay, there's a whole bunch of people who you would never suspect, because you think they're working for the United States, but they are dual Israeli citizens. Yellen, Janet Yellen, is a dual Israeli citizen. You would be amazed how many of these people are in their position right at the top of the United States government. And I will tell you that, and this is where it does get really scary, they do not care whether or not the ordinary citizens of the United States support their wars or not. Let us recall that before the invasion of Iraq, we witnessed the greatest demonstrations of democracy the world had ever seen. In Spain and Italy, one of every five citizens protested the Iraq war on the same day. Barcelona, Seville, Madrid, everybody turned out. Italy, everybody turned out. France, everybody turned out. Britain, millions of people turned out. And 6 weeks later, it didn't matter, because the whole planet was opposed to the Iraq war. And 6 weeks later, we were fighting. Okay? They do not care what you or I think about this. Now, here is something to consider. What do they care about? Okay, and this is where Russia becomes very important. When NATO announced that it was going to go into Syria, at the beginning of the Syrian civil war, NATO announced they were going to go into Syria and to defend Turkey, because Turkey's on the border and the Kurdish population was fighting against Assad, and they were trying to establish a Kurdish homeland. And Putin and Angela Merkel, president of Germany, said, "We will be there in 30 days. Hang on, Syria. Hang on, Kurdish people. NATO is coming." In 5 days, it took President Putin activated his soldiers, and they moved into Syria to defend President Bashar Assad. and they deployed in 5 days. And he moved 150,000 soldiers. And he said, it's not going to take me 30 days. Oh, no, I'm going in right now. He announced it on a Thursday. And by Tuesday, they were in, because he was not going to have NATO playing games in the Middle East.
Like they did in Libya.
They said, no way. And it was just like they did in Libya, where Russia sat on the sidelines while they did this catastrophic attack on Libya. Why? Gaddafi was a socialist. Okay, he was a socialist, but he was pretty harmless. He had given up his terrorism. He turned to the West, and there was no reason on this planet why they had to choose that moment to get rid of Gaddafi. There was no reason for it. But looking at the Syrian situation, Putin learned his lesson. And you don't have to teach President Putin and Russia twice. He saw what they did. He saw the catastrophe that unfolded. To this day, it has unfolded. That we don't even talk about Libya anymore, because it is now, like, well, Somalia, a failed state. But when Putin saw what was happening in Syria, he moved in, and he stopped NATO from coming in to defend the Kurdish people, and which would have torn everything even more apart. And I believe that that Putin is now the one factor that will stop, that might put the brakes on a U.S. on a NATO war in Gaza and the West Bank. It was very important this week. Secretary Blinken went to Saudi Arabia, and the Prince Faisal made him wait for hours, and then he said, no, we're postponing it. And then he was going to go off to, Biden was going to go have a meeting with Jordan, Egypt, and the Palestinians. And they said, nope, we're not going to do it. They all wanted to gang up on Iran, and they're not having any part of it.
No.
So Russia will not allow it to end. And Israel has already attacked the Syrian airport, the international airport in Aleppo. They bombed Syria bombed Aleppo. Israel bombed Aleppo in Syria. And considering that Russia's right there, I think that Russia will now be motivated to defend Syria.
They have to. If Syria falls, Russia is going to suffer invasions from its southern border. They know that. That's why Egypt and Jordan are not letting the Palestinians cross the borders, because the exodus would destabilize their country. They're going to keep the Palestinians contained in Hamas, in the Gaza Strip, but all the Muslim nations are riding to the rescue of these Palestinians, and it's only going
to. Israel refuses to let the water.
Let me finish
on one
thing. Food
and water that they're trying to move in.
Let me finish on one thing. You raised Libya. Libya, it deserves a reminder for everyone that's not spun up on this. When the United States and NATO and Cameron and the British and Sarkozy and the French and the Mossad in Israel went in and destroyed Libya, and the CIA had false theatrical scenes done in Qatar pretending to be in Libya when they weren't. But when they went in and bombed and gunshipped and shredded Libya, when America did it, when NATO did it, they destroyed Libya. And what happened? Millions upon millions of Africans and Middle Easterners flooded across the Mediterranean and invaded Europe. Their world was destroyed by the West. And what happened? They flooded up into Europe, and they filled France and Italy and Britain and Germany and Sweden. And what do you have now? You have a powder keg of people who can't speak the language, have no education, have very little IQs, and you have them infesting in Europe. Now you have Syria, and by the way, Bashar Assad, when you were talking about Turkey and all that, when Russia went in, Russia annihilated ISIS, not the United States. Russia went in and bombed and destroyed ISIS for what was it, 30, 60, 90 days of constant bombing, more bombs than you could imagine.
Russia and then the United States ISIS complained because they were our allies.
And Israel was providing hospitalization of ISIS fighters. Turkey, of course, at the time was stealing 800 oil trucks from Syrian oil. But Iran's General Soleimani also went to Syria, and he was battling with Hezbollah and other fighters, the ISIS, Wahhabist, Salafist mercenaries that the West were funding and giving Captagon drugs. Saudi Arabia was involved. So in the Syrian civil war, Susan,
that's why Saudi Arabia and Iran do not like each other.
They don't, but they've changed now. The Saudis supply the
ISIS fighters in Iraq and in Syria, and it was catastrophic for the whole psyche of the Middle East. Yes. Well, it is interesting. Egypt is saying that if the United States invades Gaza and invades Palestine, then Egypt will send 2 million Palestinian refugees, and so will Jordan. Egypt and Jordan will send 2 million Palestinian refugees into Europe right now. And those refugees are already, there's already strong bases, refugee camps, massive. These people have been living in tents, Shatila, for 20 years since the last disastrous war. And so all of those refugees will be sent straight into Europe. And of course, what we're seeing in France and Germany and London, there is already heavy protests, deep, heartfelt, passionate protests. And whether you agree with the civilizational clash between Europe and between Europe and the Arab world, I hate to say that some are smarter than others. They have a different type of education. The Arabs are extremely well-educated people. They know their history. They know culture. There is a religious tenet, though, that these two places do not mix well.
Yes.
Because of the religion. The religious requirements are Harun, make European civilization, they call it Harun, forbidden. And so there's this tension between them. And they can be very supremely educated people, but and very, very capable people. But they do not share a value system that allows a society, and they don't like the food. You know, they want to go home. The Arabs in France and Germany do not like the food, the weather. They want to go home to Lebanon. They want to go home to Syria. They want to go home to Iraq. Why can they not do that? Because we have destroyed it. And what we destroyed, we have never rebuilt. So it means that even if these people can't stand Europe and don't want to live there, they're being forced to stay there. They don't have any choice. They have no choice except to stay where they are.
Well, we have China entering the fold, too. And let me just say, what happened in the Syrian civil war with the Saudis and the Qataris and all of this mayhem, all of that kind of has fizzled out and disintegrated. And now you've turned the page. And it's interesting because in turning the page, it appears Saudi Arabia and Iran have a peace deal that the Chinese brokered. They're kind of not friends, but they're friendlier. They're not at each other's throats. That's a miraculous achievement. And
Iran and Saudi Arabia are both part of BRICS now. They were both accepted into BRICS. And China said, we're not going to have one or the other. We're going to bring you both in.
Yes.
Jordan is now part of BRICS. Egypt is part of BRICS. The Emirates is part of BRICS. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is just fascinating that the first countries accepted into this BRICS system were our Arab countries that are traditional U.S. allies that are now being tested for their support of the Palestinians. And there's a deep empathy, and it is Israel that has bombed the opening, the border crossing from Egypt into Gaza. On the Egyptian side are hundreds, a convoy of just hundreds of trucks with food and water and medicine ready to go into Gaza, and it was the Israelis who bombed it to stop them from coming in. They want beachfront property. This is a land grab. They are stealing these homes. Yes. They want the, they are annihilating these helpless citizens. It is complete genocide.
Using and American weapons.
Egypt warned Hamas. Yes. There was no, quote, intelligence failure like 9/11, or maybe it's exactly like 9/11. We knew about 9/11. I personally gave advance warning about 9/11, everybody. So, yes, we did know about 9/11. So this is Israel's 9/11 moment because they're pretending it didn't happen, pretending they didn't know.
Well, what this they does, did. What this does, Susan, is it unites every Muslim country. It puts aside their ideological differences from Alawite to Shia to Sunni. All of those are put to the side because the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So suddenly Turkey and Saudi Arabia and Syria and Hezbollah and Hamas and Iran and Yemen and Pakistan, they're all friends in a sense, or not. You know, it's like Scottish clans or the American Indians, right? They may have fought the Apaches and the Sioux and the Blackfeet. They may have fought each other. But when the white man comes in to destroy their villages, they all unite. And it's Custer's last stand. I know we talked before the show, but this Israeli-American adventure, I think they are Custer. The Americans and the Israelis are Custer. If America's stupid enough to get into this, you're going to have them go in and they're going to be surrounded by millions upon millions of Muslims that are coming from every angle across the earth to converge and defend women and children that are being destroyed in a genocide and a war crime, which the United Nations has already said, yep, that's a war crime. You can't do that. You can't turn off the electricity and the water and the medicine and bomb hospitals. No, we know you're a liar about that because we've got the tweets. No, you can't take this land. So all of these people are converging, and I'll hand it to you, Susan, about what you see coming. What are the Israelis going to do? What are the Americans going
to do? I would like you to get that tweet that I sent you and put that up on the screen while I'm talking.
Okay.
And just you find it. I'll take over while you do that.
All right.
That's so important. That was a false flag. There earlier this week, there was a terrible situation where a hospital was bombed. The Israelis, 500 people died in that one event. And the Israelis saw the catastrophe of it and they tried to blame the Hamas, but it was Israel that did it. And they are on record saying that we've warned you to shut down that hospital. We've warned you to evacuate. And we fired a couple of warning shots at you. Now we're going to strike. And that you've got to see that video because we need to stop Israel from pretending to be this morally superior country. It is not. They are engaged in genocide. Gaza is an open air prison. Mm-hmm. These people they've been blockaded and starved. It's one of the most densely populated cities on the communities on this earth. Mm-hmm. 2 million people live and in a packed environment. And let's see.
Is this what you were referring to?
No. Okay, never mind. I'll see if I can find it. Okay. I'll see if I can find it while you, if you want to take over for just a second.
Well, there's, you know, the thing, and let me mention this too. This is interesting. This is a very significant element of this PSYOP that's unfolding. And you had mentioned earlier the dual Israeli citizens that are infesting so much of America's government and intelligence areas. And I saw this at the State Department too. Dual Israeli citizens who were professors, you know, part of this whole neocon war machine. But what I see is this, Susan. There are these Jewish dual Israeli citizen types like Ben Shapiro, Sebastian Gorka, and others who are browbeating and bullying and name-calling Americans who, like, including Tucker, they're name-calling Tucker because Americans aren't throwing themselves with a wild rebel yell fury, frothing at the mouth, to kill them all, finish them. Because Americans aren't expressing that kind of bloodlust, These dual Israeli citizens like Ben Shapiro and Sebastian Gorka are calling Americans, well, you're just cretins if you don't understand this. In other words, you're just stupid. You're a stupid goyim. You don't seem to understand. You have to be part. You have to be in this fight. And that is going to cause an anti-Zionist, anti-Jew, anti-Semitic, whatever you want to call it, anti-Jewish Israeli attitude in America and Europe, because Americans are not going to be talked to that way. They're not going to allow people to say, you need to get into this fight with Israel. Every American knows that this conflict has been caused by Israel's inhumanity. If Israel was a humane, decent, kind country, it would provide food and opportunity. It would recognize a two-state solution. And instead, it has been limiting the caloric intake, limiting the electricity, limiting the water, confining these people onto a prison camp existence, and thus creating a champagne cork situation. I'll show this video real quick too, while you're bringing the other one up, of what I mentioned in. Let's see. Here's the other video you sent me. Let me play that. And this was, this was from Redacted. And we'll play this while you're bringing it up.
Something big is coming, bigger than what is happening in Israel and Gaza, bigger than the United States just announcing it's sending a massive second carrier group to Israel. No, we are being played like pawns on a giant globalist chessboard right now. And if you watch our show for any length of time, you already know this. Of course, you're already informed about this. At the heart of it, though, are real human beings suffering unimaginable cruelty as these globalists try to consolidate power. It's really the unipolar versus multipolar world war that we have been producing. Predicting here on this channel. We'll get into that part of the story here in a moment. But first, I just returned from northern Egypt this weekend, where the eyes of the world are on the massive ground invasion of Gaza by the Israeli army. Now, according to sources this morning, the invasion has been delayed for a short time because of rain. There's too much cloud cover right now over northern Gaza at this moment, which is hindering what Israeli pilots would be able to do. So we're in this sort of holding pattern right now, a calm before the storm, if you will. In the meantime, Egypt is cautious about what this would mean for their country, as millions of Palestinians could try to pour across into northern Egypt. Egypt has deployed troops to this area in order to prevent chaos. The ex-foreign minister of Israel says here's what should happen. Egypt should set up a massive tent city and move Palestinians into the Sinai Desert, so they can live in a tent city, kind of like Burning Man in the desert.
The area, where were they to go?
Yeah, well, we've seen.
This is thought out.
You're on mute, Susan.
Go.
I want you to play the video that I've just sent you. This is Gaza before and after, so that we can see the scale of the damage that has already been done in the past week, and consider how excessive and extreme it is. Can you pull this up?
Yeah, let me download it real quick.
And it shows Gaza, different sections of the city before the bombings. They're trying to say that only a couple thousand people have died. In fact, it's more than 20,000. It has to be, that 2,000 homes have been destroyed. It's more like 200,000 homes have been destroyed. This staggers the mind that this could ever have been possible. And it is worth, while you're downloading that, I want everybody to know that Bill Gates, who the CIA director, Bob Gates, who had said Joe Biden was responsible for every foreign policy failure in the past 20 years. When Biden was campaigning for president, they said, this man has a terrible foreign policy record. He wanted to divide Yemen. Iraq into three parts. Biden wanted to divide Libya into two countries. Biden wanted to divide Syria into two countries. And it's like crazy. Why would you do this? Why? Why would you ever do this? He's started another a war. Biden started five wars in 7 years as vice president. It was one of the worst parts of Obama's presidency, were all the wars that they had. There we go. Look at this. Play this for me.
This is the huge destruction that hit properties belonging to the residents of Khan Yunis south of the Gaza Strip, as you see here. What are you doing here? What?
Oh, that is a little boy. Okay, that's the wrong video. That's a little boy whose shop is destroyed by the bombs, and that was his family home. Where his family lived above the shop, and this is all this little boy has in the world. It's a money exchange shop.
It really is. This sort of thing is going to stir up the world, I think, unlike any other thing, any other time. The Jewish Israeli attitude is now full-born stormtrooper Nazi. Nazi going berserk and ballistic with a bloodlust that we haven't seen. And the American United States government representatives are, they've got blood on their hands, and you're going to see a backlash unlike anything else. Let me stop.
Yeah, I sorry about that. That was the wrong. I have so many videos.
Let me play this other one real quick with Ritter. I thought Ritter did a very good job, and it's
There's some things that I want to say.
Yeah, go ahead.
We are, I am anti-war. I am opposed to. I don't care who's doing the killing. I don't care who's doing the dying. I am opposed to this death and destruction. What we're seeing is casual murder. It is casual massacres. And we have we are always complaining about ISIS and why the Arabs are fighting back against the West, why the United States has lost its moral authority. How can you doubt that we're this great nation? But this is why. We are destroying ourselves. When each of these bombs is a funeral oration for the United States, because we will not have the trust and the respect of the global community any longer. And with BRICS and China waiting in the wings, they can come in. China has been, it's almost scary how silent China is right now. Mm-hmm. I believe truly that China is watching the US bombs and calculating that the cost, remember, we have a $33 trillion debt. Mm-hmm. This year, we have a $2 trillion debt. Just in 1 year, we have $2 trillion. Going forward, we are paying more money on the debt than we pay for the Pentagon budget. The entire Pentagon budget is smaller than the interest payment on the debt. And just last week, there was a debt sale, a treasury bond sale. And the dealers were forced to hold on to 18% of the notes that they were trying to sell. They couldn't find buyers for it. No one is buying our debt. That was double from the 11% from a year ago. And the 11% was like up from 3%. So they were, a year ago, they thought 11% was bad. Now it's 18%. No one is going to touch us. Saudi Arabia, we are not energy independent any longer. We are dependent on Saudi and the Emirates. And President Trump, as you pointed out, the Abraham Accords, They were beautiful things. Jared Kushner deserved a Nobel Peace Prize for negotiating with peace between Israel and the Emirates, Israel and Egypt, Israel and Jordan. There were five or six of them that were achieved. And all of these countries are now ready to pick up arms and tear up those Abraham Accords.
Yes.
And go back into a war to defend Palestine against genocide. And we are committing genocide.
Yes.
And it's terrible. It's terrible when the Khmer Rouge did it in Cambodia. And it's terrible when the Israelis are doing it in Palestine. It is an evil, horrific thing. And we cannot, you know, the human spirit cannot allow this to happen. It's all about stealing their land. Israel wants the land. They've decided they're going to take it. Joe Biden is so weak. He cannot fight them. He doesn't think. He doesn't have a brain anymore. He's so easily manipulated.
Let me jump in there. We saw the moment this happened, a ferocious, blind, hysterical, vomiting, enthusiastic proclamation from every Republican conservative, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Rand Paul, Matt Gaetz, Jim Jordan, all of these people on Capitol Hill, all saying, we must stand with Israel, our greatest ally, our best friend. All the money from Ukraine we need to send to Israel. Josh Hawley says, oh, let's just give all the money to Israel. And I'm going, whoa, you are a bunch of hypocrite, lying clowns that have no sense of balance or equilibrium. You've said it well, Susan. We are committing war crimes. We have to be interested in the interests of the United States of America and our people, not in Israel, not in France, not in Germany, not in Britain, not in any other country, but the American people.
We are
off the reservation. And I'll tell you, we have become that which we sought to destroy. In 2000 till now, we have evolved or devolved into this monstrous, ugly, murderous, genocidal, aiding and abetting criminal nation. It is a terrible thing to watch. But if you don't tell that truth, you're lying. We have no nobility or virtue in us if we are on the side of this genocide. That doesn't mean somebody comes in and kills your people. Yeah, you go and kill them. But you don't get the license to go in and commit genocide. You don't get the license to blow up hospitals.
Israel recognizes the United States is in its halcyon days. Yeah. Now, for those of you who don't, this word is very important in foreign policy and empire. Halcyon are the last, the dying embers of light. When the sun is fading, the last day, the last hour, the final hours of the day are the halcyon afternoon, 5 o'clock, 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yes.
The halcyon days of the United States. We are at the edge, the final moment where we are about to get kicked off stage. The global stage will not have us back. And Israel sees that. Mm-hmm. Israel sees that we are bankrupt. We have a pathetic, horribly incapable, incompetent, paralyzed, broken government. We are non-functioning in our own sphere. But they see that this is the last moment when Israel could, they're trying to capitalize on our last final hour on the global stage.
They're demanding $10 billion.
Demanding the last global drop of glory that the United States has is being squandered on this genocidal, corrupt Bibi Netanyahu is a crook. Bibi Netanyahu has been prosecuted so many times for corruption. He's as corrupt as Zelensky. And that's why Zelensky and Bibi Netanyahu love each other so much, because they're both crooks.
Do you see this transforming over the next weeks and months into a Hitler's last stand, where as Hitler was surrounded in the bunker by the Russians, by the British, by the French, by the Americans, that the Muslims are going to converge upon Israel in a swarm, military operation?
I think that they will. I think that there will be this is a turning point in history, and it could easily become a world war, a major regional war. And the problem is that, and realize the Arabs are in Europe because we drove them out. We drove them out of Libya, and we drove them out of Iraq and Syria. That's why they're in Europe. They don't want to be there. The smartest thing we could do would be to rebuild Iraq and rebuild Syria so they could go home, and we would have this civilization we could pull back and have the two civilizations separated from each other again. And that would be a smart thing, but that's not what they're doing. And I foresee they will not be, here's the problem. They will not be able to get into Israel. They will not be able to get into Gaza and the West Bank. So where they will strike will be Paris. Where they will strike will be Sweden and Malmo. Where they will strike will be Berlin. Where they will strike will be everywhere in Europe. In Downing Street, there will be a huge, and the West will call those people terrorists, but the people themselves will call themselves freedom fighters.
Well, we have to be careful.
There's no longer a small little part of it. There's no longer a small population. There's a large population.
Remember this, though, too. As we've seen in the Charlie Hebdo attacks, the Israeli Mossad are very good at dressing up as Arabs and conducting terrorist attacks and pretending it's done by Muslims in order to generate indigenous local hostility. And I have said I would not be surprised if the Israeli Mossad launched terror attacks claiming to be done by Hamas to try and generate a Western American European momentum to their side. I mean, what better way to get the Europeans to do a tidal wave of money and support and weapons than go in and secretly pretend you're Arabs and yell Allah Akbar and tie a green flag around you and shoot up or set bombs or do crazy stuff?
Well, I don't think even they're going to have to worry about that, because I think the Arabs will do it.
Well, I don't know.
Arabs will do it. But I don't think Israel's going to have to send the Mossad.
But see, the difference is, though, too, we're in that different world where Turkey, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Yemen, Syria, they're not looking to fight and attack each other anymore. They're looking at this situation and area. And
there is no way that Europe could go into Israel and with the United States. Israel and the United States will stand alone, because if they do, they will be so threatened by their own domestic population of migrants.
Yes.
It
yes,
would be impossible for Europe to even contemplate going.
Yeah. Shift, actually. I see Europe shifting much more, being sympathetic to the Muslims, as Russia is, as China is. Because the BRICS nation has set everything into a different orientation. The BRICS organization represents the future of international trade and sovereignty and mutual defense pact. If you're a member of BRICS, you're no longer in a war footing. Iran, Saudi Arabia, that's what that means. When you enter BRICS, you're now accountable to everybody else there, China, Russia, India, South Africa. You're all coming together into this neutral economic consortium. And that demands good behavior. So I think that is going to...
It also means the United States, all of those nations will see that they must end the United States.
Yes.
And they will end us through economic isolation.
That's right.
And that is the best punishment, because They won't need to, they will band together for their own strength to create. And right now, China's leading the Belt and Road Initiative, big summit in Beijing, right up today, this week.
Yep. And which Putin was just at and having private conversations, no doubt about this situation too.
Yeah.
Do you see the embassies of Israel and the United States being kicked out of countries and their consulates being closed like we did to Russia? Do you see a diplomatic expulsion phase entering into
this? I see a financial expulsion. That maybe some embassies, but I think it'll be much deeper and more destructive because the United States depends on, we don't produce anything. We have no factories that produce anything. So we get all of our consumer goods from China and the Asian developing markets, which we capitalized. We capitalized them. And now that BRICS, I don't think that most people realize BRICS banking system will be a closed system. Mm-hmm. It will not be open going like a heart from left to right, east to west. It will be a heart that's very strong, very muscular, but it'll go around like this. And we will be starved and atrophied.
Yes.
They will not put their resources, their wealth in our hands where we could touch it and take it and steal it from them.
Precisely because of the things that we're doing, we're enabling,
right now,
creating and abetting right now. And Ukraine is another example. Let me shift over there and get your feedback on Ukraine. So we've lost
Ukraine. Ukraine is a destroyed nation. And
Two thirds of the people are gone.
They have a 4-hour survival on the battlefield. We've talked about how Russia is offering them amnesty if they surrender and giving them instructions now of how to surrender so that they can be taken. A lot of these people are Russian speakers who were invaded by the Western Ukrainians who speak the Ukrainian language, and they came over, invaded the Eastern Ukraine, and then forced at gunpoint, those men to go fight. If they were fighting age, they were taken off and forced to go fight against Russia. And so Russia is now offering them amnesty if they will surrender. And a lot of them are quite happy to do so. Better to stay alive and have food and medicine. And all they have to do is, and they're surrendering to their natural ethnic kin. So Russia's not even treating them like they're going into war prisons or anything like that.
No.
They're not prisoners of war. They just have to leave the battlefield, which they are happy to do. They did not want to be fighting against Russia in the first place, in the Donbass and Kursk and Odessa. And I think that that the United States is, again, the last to know. And this final, I think the next 6 months of, you know, winter is coming, and the European people who are already sick of the United States and the whole, the Nord Stream gas explosions and all of this, they are not going to sacrifice anymore. I think everybody is sick of the United States demanding this.
Look at this story, what you're talking about. This fascinated me. They're calling Russia, in the Senate in Russia, Russia the safest country in Europe, says a senator. Russians who left their country will return once they realize that other European countries are more dangerous, says Sergei Teskov. I won't read the whole article, but he says Russia is one of the safest countries in the world to live in, particularly among all the European nations. As all of this chaos starts to unfold, Susan, as the Muslims start going apoplectic and you start potentially having Mossad set off terrorist things in Europe, as Europe goes ballistic, Russia is the safest country in Europe. And he says a lot of Russians that left Russia are going to want to come back, and many aren't going to be allowed back because of the crimes that they did, stealing money when they left, you know, and all that jazz. But
a lot of people will be allowed back. A lot of them will, because they're just ordinary people who went to Western Europe looking for opportunity. And they're not criminals. They're not bad people. They were just looking for opportunity. And we have forgotten, I remember, and I'm sure you do too, but the fall of the old Soviet Union before Putin is about to happen here in the United States.
Our own perestroika. Yep.
Our own perestroika, which I think is going to be a terrifying thing.
It's going to be worse here because we don't have a homogeneous culture or ethnicity or tribalism. We are a patchwork of different tribes and peoples and this, and we're at odds with each other too. So it's going to be
an extreme difference. Far worse. Extreme differences in socioeconomic backgrounds, where the immigrants who are coming in have very, very, very poor education, poor prospects. It's not a question whether they're smart or not smart. They have no skills. They're not educated or literate in their own country. They don't read or write in their own language. They don't know how to do basic math in their own country.
They're squatters.
And now they've been thrown out of their country. Say, go to America.
Well, they've been invited by Biden. Here are the borders. Oh. Here's an app on the cell phone. Come on in and you'll have a hearing in 10 years. Susan, we're running out of time, but I want to ask you about Sidney Powell has agreed with government prosecutors to testify against her co-defendant.
I think this is
what do you say?
I am not upset about this at all. I thought about this. Sidney Powell, we're talking about the Donald Trump trial in Georgia. Sidney Powell was one of the attorneys in the election interference case. She wrote a brilliant article on foreign interference. She was part of the investigation, and she has taken a plea deal for a misdemeanor. They were accusing her of racketeering. She's going to pay $6,000 in fines, which is nothing. And she has to testify truthfully. And in the Trump trial. Now, here's the deal. Truthfully, they cannot suborn perjury. So she's going to have to say, Trump shouldn't have done that. But she's also a skilled attorney. There will be lots of opportunity for her to say exactly what she knows to be true and to provide factual testimony of the election interference. And where did this, and Trump's attorneys will grill her hard, and she will
cross-examination.
Cross-examination, and she will be saying where it all comes from, which it comes from the Pentagon. The United States military on election night, the Department of Defense and Homeland Security ran a counteroffensive to stop cyber hackers in China from infiltrating the U.S. elections on election night. And so this is her bailiwick, and it's going to be great. I'm actually very excited because,
well, remember this.
She will be forced to tell the truth.
Yeah, I
cannot suborn perjury.
Well, I hope, but I know they are good at suborning perjury without suborning perjury for all.
I know, but they can't. But if she's not a willing, if she's
not a hostile witness, and that's what we've yet to see. But remember this: they will have her deposed first. They will sit her down in a room and ask her 50 questions to see how she answers. And then they're going to put her on the stand and ask her.
But she cannot commit perjury.
No, but they will choose what they ask her.
Okay, but she cannot commit perjury.
Well, no, she can't. But we're in a Democrat prosecutor.
We're in a Democrat court
that hates Donald Trump.
Okay, but Wessel, the Letitia James in the New York fraud trial found out what that means with Wesselberg. Alan Wesselberg, part of his plea deal was that he had to agree to testify against Trump. And she was like, Letitia James was like, hey, tell us this, tell us something bad. And he's like, well, actually, I don't think there is anything bad. I don't remember that. I don't remember that. I don't recall. I don't recall. And he's, and she's like, and so they ended up getting nothing out of it. Wow. It was a big zero. And then they're like, and now they're like, then they had to wait on Michael Cohen. They had to stop the trial for a medical emergency for Michael Cohen, who wants to testify against Trump. But when believe me, these people, that they cannot suborn perjury. She promises to testify truthfully, and that's what she's going to do. She's not going to lie. And the fact is that these cases are so stupid to begin with that it's only worth a $6,000 fine and probation. Well, and the other guy, one other person has also pleaded guilty, the bail bondsman, and he's on probation for 5 years. He's also a misdemeanor.
But remember
And his attorney says, I don't know what he could say about Trump because I really don't know anything about this issue.
Remember this, though, and I know this personally, having gone through it. When you take a plea deal and you go before the judge, and she hasn't done it yet, but when she goes before the judge after she testifies, the prosecutor is going to go to the judge and Sidney Powell is going to be standing there, and the judge is going to say, what are you recommending? And the prosecutor is going to say 6 years of probation, Your Honor. And the judge, Susan, can say, no, I'm not accepting that. Sorry, Miss Powell, you're going to be an example for the rest of the lawyers.
Okay, but
I'm giving you a year or 2 years or 3 years. The judge determines the sentence.
But hold on. That's true. But remember that the judge is also required to allow withhold, is required to hand over exculpatory evidence to the defense. And by the time all of this goes down, there's going to be lots of evidence that they were telling the truth.
Well, she's already
all of these people. I know.
She's admitted to a crime. So now she's going to be sentenced for that crime.
For a misdemeanor.
Yeah, but there's not going to be, but there's not going to be any new evidence brought in. It's going to be, she's already put her neck in the guillotine, Susan, and she is hoping for the mercy of the court. She's hoping the judge will say, yes, I accept your plea deal offer.
But
my guess is the judge is going to say, no, I'm not accepting
that. No, I
think
the judge
will. You're going to jail, Ms. Powell.
I think the judge is going to accept it because the judge has to get this out of his court. This is a disaster in Georgia.
The judge can sentence her and say, you're out of here, go to jail for a year, and that's it. She's
but
gone.
If they were to do that one time right at the beginning with the first defendant.
They won't do that until after the trial.
Okay, but hold on. Just let me say this. The first time the judge does that, no one else will plea. Nobody else will plea. So hold on. Nobody else will plea. And what's happening in Georgia right now is very important. This is reminiscent of the KKK and the real white racists in the political class who attacked the black voters.
Yeah.
Who attacked the black voters, who made them in Jim Crow. They were required to answer. They had to pay a poll tax. Black voters had to pay a special fee for the right to vote. They had to answer a civics test.
Democrats.
And the Democrats did the Democrats did this to the blacks.
Yes.
10 questions that, you know, how, you know, to prove that the black person was intelligent enough, politically educated enough to be deserving of a vote. And so this attack on voting rights, and what does she want? She wanted integrity in the election. And Governor Kemp and his boys, his KKK boys with the little hoods, they were like, you will not challenge. We will decide who wins these elections. And you, we don't care what you think. We don't care if there's election integrity or not. We don't care. You are going to do whatever we say. It doesn't matter how you vote. It matters that we're the ones counting the election, and you will not challenge us again.
Finally,
you will
Susan,
not challenge us.
In and closing,
this is so bad in Georgia. It is so bad. So he will. The judge has already indicated, from what I saw today. Now you could be right that the judge will change his mind, but what's going to happen is
That's the thing, Susan. It's being offered by the prosecutors. The judge doesn't comment until he goes in his black robe. He sits down at the desk. And he says, okay, what do we have, prosecutor? Your Honor, we're presenting Sidney Powell. She's pleaded guilty. We've agreed to recommend to the court.
Okay, I get it. I know, Scott.
The judge goes, but thank you, but I don't think that'll serve.
I don't think you're right. I think you're wrong. Because there are two reasons. One, the judge, this is going so badly for the political class in Georgia. They have to get this case out of the court.
Well,
and they have to get it out. The first time that the judge challenges a plea deal and the judge over sentences will be the last plea deal they get. And
I'll tell you what, I'm gonna bet you a beer. She gets her ass thrown in jail.
No, I'll bet you. But then the other side of it is that at the end of this trial, all the evidence is going to show that there was election interference.
Sure.
And so that's what they're afraid of now. Remember, I gave my affidavit to the court. Mm-hmm. So the judge knows that there was election interference. Oh, shoot. I did this the first week. Mm-hmm. I sent my sworn affidavit about the four ways that China interfered in our elections. Mm-hmm. And whether you agree with me or not, I said there's going to be witnesses coming into court to tell you this is true.
Get this
case out of your court. And now the judge is like, oh my God, we are going to have a challenge to this.
Yeah.
This is not going to be a slam dunk. Mm-mm. And so, you know, it now behooves the political class that thought they were being so clever. The black voters are fleeing the Democrat Party. They're going to vote for Trump.
Well, let me ask you on that, because let me just ask you on this particular issue of Israel and Hamas and this conflict. Trump, I think, has stepped into a bear trap, and I want to get your opinion on it, because when Trump and everyone reacted with this blind, blah, blah, yes, Israel needs to, we need to do this and this and that, I'm thinking, whoa, you're now stepping in an unprecedented way. You're supposed to be balanced. You're supposed to say, yes, Israel can defend itself, but the Palestinians don't deserve to be genocided. Yes, you need a two-state solution. Susan, how is Trump going to continue to react to this? Destroy himself?
Trump is on the wrong side. Trump has been a huge backer of Israel. He wanted to out Israel everybody else. He was going to be the biggest, best friend that Israel had. And then the Jews in New York did not care.
Yeah.
They just did not care. They got everything they could get from him.
Yep.
And then they said, okay, we don't need you anymore.
And Netanyahu stabbed him in the back the moment Biden snuck in.
Yep.
But is this going to kill Trump's chances with the American people?
No, but I think that what will happen is that Trump will have to decide whether he supports a war in Israel, in Palestine, and a regional war. Because we could easily end up in a regional war in this situation.
We will have all our boats sunk.
Israel is attacking Syria. That is a mistake. They want to attack Iran. That is a mistake.
Oh,
you know, Egypt and Jordan are not going to be able to hold back their own Palestinian populations. Very sizable populations of refugees in Egypt and Jordan. And Egypt is already saying they're going to send all the Palestinian refugees to Europe. They said, you start a war, we're going to send our refugees straight to you, every one of them. You'll have 2 million people coming in. And so it will, the Arabs know that will have some power too. So this is good. That I think though that the problem is that Biden is so stupid and so weak that he is going to start a war that Trump will be forced to continue fighting. And then
unless they gag, remember they gagged Trump. So Chuchkin, the lawyer up in D.C., gagged Trump. So he can't say anything critical. Now, if he says anything,
about Jack Smith.
If she thinks he has said something that violates her gag order, arrest him and throw him in jail.
Okay, but that's entirely different. That involves the prosecutor. Is Trump threatening witnesses or the prosecutor?
And the judge.
The judge, but that's different than Israel.
But it's her discretion.
Yeah,
she has the sole discretion to say, you violated my gag order, I'm throwing you in jail. You don't like it, take it to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, they will. They will. Yeah, I predict that this is all backfiring fast. It's like Georgia. This did not go the way that they thought. They thought everybody would be on their side.
Is it going to create a revolution in this country finally?
Yes,
I think
we're heading into a civil war situation. I think it is escalating rapidly escalating. And the collapse of the United States is escalating. It's crashing faster than even I thought. I thought the Congress would be able to get through the 24 elections at least. And that we'd have until another like 18 months. But I see this period as the period right before the Civil War that we had in the 1860s.
And they can't even get Jim
before
Jordan.
It is exactly like the presidential election of 1860, which resulted in the breakup of the United States.
Yes.
And the whole country going into a war footing and attacking each other. Except at this point, no one will be coming to defend the United States. We will be isolated. No one's going to jump in and try to assist us. No one's going to provide food and medicine and aid to help us and weapons to help us fight. We will be very much, they're going to let the rats eat the other rats in the barrel.
Susan, before we go, I want to ask your opinion on the Speaker of the House situation. They've been trying to vote Jim Jordan in. He hasn't got in. He's had two votes, and now there's going to be a third. I'm not sure. What do you see happening with this Speaker of the House, Jim Jordan? I'm amazed that we are so incompetent and cowardly that we can't get the best man. I think Jim Jordan's a man's man.
I don't care. I think they made a terrible mistake ousting McCarthy without having a plan already in place. If they were really wanted to have Jim Jordan, they should have gone to Jim Jordan before it ever happened, and they should have calculated the number of votes, and they should have done a caucus, internal Republican caucus, private behind closed doors, which they had the capability to do, and say, okay, we want to go to Jim Jordan. Will you do it? And they would have known that they can't, that they don't. Jim Jordan does not have the support to do it.
That's amazing to me.
He's the strongest man up there. But Matt Gaetz screwed everybody. He did not think this through at all.
Do you see them coming to Jim Jordan? Do you see them finally going, okay, Jim Jordan's the only man's man, the only guy who can really get the trains to run on time. He's got the strength of character to do that, which is what we need in this time. Do you see them going that way? Or are they going to be pro tem and some other bastard?
Pro tem. I think that the Republicans are going to lose in 24. I think that they have really shot themselves, Scott. I really think this was a catastrophic strategic mistake. McCarthy was doing just fine. He was doing just fine. There's nothing that McCarthy did. He handled the debt ceiling. He got them through the debt ceiling, and he did a really great job on that. And what has happened since then? You know, there's nothing that we can look at it and say, oh, McCarthy really messed up when he did this. He really messed up when he did that. Matt Gaetz threw a temper tantrum. Matt Gaetz thought that he could put Donald Trump into the speakers, that now they were going to have the impeachment of Joe Biden. This was a great time to get rid of
McCarthy. Well, they could do that. Can't they do that? They could vote for Donald Trump to be speaker?
They would never. There's not enough votes to get him in. There's not enough votes. And so they took away what they had, which was working. And then they, and now we're not talking about the, I'm really angry. We're not talking about the border. We're not talking about crime and fentanyl and the deterioration of our cities. We're not talking about the economic energy independence. We're not talking about, you know, the weaponization of the courts. We're not talking about Biden's corruption. Nothing. It's all ground to a halt because Matt Gaetz decided that for why? You know, they why didn't Jim Jordan run?
Well, if it doesn't end well, Susan, you're right. Matt Gaetz could go down as Benedict Arnold.
Well, I don't think Benedict Arnold is exactly the right word because actually, yes, because he went over to the Democrats. He went over to the Democrats to get this to oust McCarthy, and now they're going to have this real milquetoast who's pro-Democrat.
Yeah, that's the danger. If you got a pro-Democrat,
that was really stupid.
Suddenly,
incredibly stupid. And the Democrats are the Republicans are going to lose in 2024. I don't believe that they're going to win. I don't believe that they are. And I think that Matt Rosendale in Montana, I think he was grandstanding because he thought he was going to run for senator of Montana. And his people at home would be like, oh, yay, he's standing up for something. But now when the outcome is so bad, we're going to see. And again, it's because they didn't think to the next morning. They did not have a plan as to what to do. If they wanted Jim Jordan, they should have put him in back in January.
Yes.
And why have McCarthy? At all? You know, you choose your speaker, you stand by the speaker. And if they wanted Jim Jordan, then they should have said that that was the moment to do it. But once we're in the middle of the game with the Biden corruption and the impeachment and all of this, all of that stopped.
Wow. Well, on that happy, joyous note, Susan, we will end it there. Thank you very much for joining us. It is always an honor to hear your expertise on some of the most important subjects we have, and we will continue to do that. We'll see you next week. Thank you for joining us on Global Freedom TV, Great Awakenings. Join us on our website. If you have any comments, go up there and email us. We love to hear from you. God bless you. We will see you again. Good night.